and forth, seemingly preparing to leap on the warrior and devour him.
"This will be fun. Let him have his weapon,"
the dragon commanded. Its flapping wings caused a wind to whip through the camp, scattering sparks from the fire. Karaman shoved the draconian guards aside. Wiping his hand across his eyes, he walked over to the pile of weapons and pulled out his sword. Then he turned to face the dragon, resignation and grief etched into his face. He raised his sword.
"We can't let him die out there by himself," Sturm said harshly, and he took a step forward, prepared to break out.
Suddenly, a voice came from the shadows behind them.
"Psst! Tanis!"
The half-elf whirled around. "Flint!" he exclaimed, then glanced apprehensively at the draconian guards, but they were absorbed in watching the spectacle of Karaman and the dragon. Tanis hurried to the back of the bamboo cage where the dwarf stood.
"Get out of here," the half-elf ordered. "There's nothing you can do. Raistlin's dying and the dragon—" "It's Tasseloth,"
Flint said succinctly.
"What?"
Tanis glared at the dwarf.
"Makes sense." "The dragon is Tasseloth,"
Flint repeated patiently. For once, Tanis was speechless. He stared at the dwarf.
"The dragon's made of wicker,"
the dwarf whispered hurriedly.
"Tasseloth sneaked behind it and looked inside. It's rigged. Anyone sitting inside the dragon can make the wings flap and speak through a hollow tube. I guess that's how the priests keep order around here. Anyway, Tasselhoff's the one flapping his wings and threatening to eat Karaman."
Tanis gasped. "But what do we do? There's still 100 draconians around. Sooner or later they're going to realize what's going on."
"Get over to Karaman, you and Riverwind and Sturm. Grab your weapons and packs and the staff. I'll help Gold Moon carry Raistlin into the woods. Tasselhoff's got something in mind. Just be ready."
Tanis groaned.
"I don't like it any better than you do,"
the dwarf growled.
"Trusting our lives to that rattle-brained Kender, but, well,
he is the dragon, after all."
"He certainly is," Tanis said, eyeing the dragon, who was shrieking and wailing and flapping its wings and rocking back and forth. The draconians were staring at it in open-mouthed wonder. Tanis grabbed Sturm and Riverwind and huddled down near Gold Moon, who had not left Raistlin's side. The half-elf explained what was happening. Sturm looked at him as if he were as crazed as Raistlin. Riverwind shook his head.
"Well, have you got a better plan?" Tanis asked.
Both of them looked at the dragon, then back at Tanis, and shrugged.
"Gold Moon goes with the dwarf,"
Riverwind said. She started to protest. He looked at her, his eyes expressionless, and she swallowed and fell silent.
"Yes,"
Tanis said.
"Stay with Raistlin, lady, please. We'll bring the staff to you."
"Hurry, then," she said through white lips. "He is very nearly gone."
"We'll hurry," Tanis said grimly. "I have a feeling that once things get started out there, we're going to be moving very fast."
He patted her hand.
"Come on."
He stood up and took a deep breath. River Wind's eyes were still on Gold Moon. He started to speak, then shook his head irritably and turned without a word to stand beside Tanis. Sturm joined them. The three crept up behind the draconian guards. Karaman lifted his sword. It flashed in the firelight. The dragon went into a wild frenzy, and all of the draconians fell back, braying and beating their swords against their shields. Wind from the dragon's wings blew up ashes and sparks from the fire, setting some nearby bamboo huts on fire. The draconians did not notice, so eager were they for the kill. The dragon shrieked and howled, and Karaman felt his mouth go dry and his stomach muscles clench. It was the first time he had ever gone into battle without his brother. The thought made his heart throb painfully. He was about to leap forward and attack when Tanis, Sturm, and Riverwind appeared out of nowhere to stand by his side.
"We will not let our friend die alone,"
the half-elf cried defiantly at the dragon. The draconians cheered wildly.
"Get out of here, Tanis!"
Karaman scowled, his face flushed and streaked with tears.
"This is my fight!"
"Shut up and listen," Tanis ordered. "Get your sword and mine, Sturm. Riverwind, grab your weapons and the packs and any draconian weapons you can pick up to replace those we lost. Karaman, pick up the two staffs." Karaman stared at him.
"What?" "Tasselhoff's the dragon,"
Tanis said. "There isn't time to explain. Just do as I say. Get the staff and take it into the woods. Gold Moon's waiting." He laid his hand on the warrior's shoulder. Tanis shoved him.
"Go! Raistlin's almost finished. You're his only chance."
This statement reached Karaman's mind. He ran to the pile of weapons and grabbed the blue crystal staff and Raistlin's staff of Magius, while the draconians yelled. Sturm and Riverwind armed themselves, Sturm bringing Tanis his sword.
"And now prepare to die, humans!"
the dragon screamed. Its wings gave a great lurch, and suddenly the creature was flying, hovering in midair. The draconians croaked and cried out in alarm, some breaking for the woods, others hurling themselves flat on the ground.
"Now," yelled Tanis, "run, Karaman!"
The big warrior broke for the woods, running swiftly toward where he could see Gold Moon and Flint waiting for him. A draconian appeared in front of him, but Karaman hurled it out of his way with a thrust of his great arm. He could hear a wild commotion behind him, Sturm chanting a Solamnic war cry, draconians yelling. Other draconians leaped at Karaman. He used the blue crystal staff as he had seen Gold Moon use it, swinging it in a wide arc with his huge right hand. It flashed blue flame and the draconians fell back. Karaman reached the woods and found Raistlin lying at Gold Moon's feet, barely breathing. Gold Moon grabbed the staff from Karaman and lay it on the mage's inert body. Flint watched, shaking his head.
"It won't work,"
muttered the dwarf.
"It's used up."
"It has to work," Gold Moon said firmly. "Please," she murmured. "Whoever is master of this staff, heal this man. Please."
Unknowing, she repeated it over and over. Karaman watched for a moment, blinking his eyes. Then the woods around him were lit by a gigantic burst of flame.
"Name of the Abyss!"
Flint breathed.
"Look at that!"
Karaman turned, just in time to see the great black wicker dragon crash headlong into the blazing fire. Flaming logs flew into the air, showering sparks over the camp. The draconians' bamboo huts, some already ablaze, began burning fiercely. The wicker dragon gave a final, horrifying shriek, and then it too caught fire.
"Tasselhoff!"
Flint swore.
"That blasted Kenter, he's inside there!"
Before Karaman could stop him, the dwarf ran out into the blazing draconian camp.
"Karaman!"
Raistlin murmured. The big warrior knelt beside his brother. Raistlin was still pale, but his eyes were open and clear. He sat up, weakly, leaning against his brother, and stared out at the raging fire.
"What's going on?"
"I'm not sure," Karaman said.
"Tasselhoff turned into a dragon, and after that things get real confused. You just rest."
The warrior stared into the smoke, his sword drawn and ready in case any draconians came for them. But the draconians now had little interest in the prisoners. The smaller breed, panic-stricken, were fleeing into the forest as their great god-dragon went up in flames. A few of the robed Draconians, bigger and apparently more intelligent than the other species, were trying desperately to bring order to the fearful chaos raging around them. Sturm fought and slashed his way through the Draconians without encountering any organized resistance. He had just reached the edge of the clearing near the bamboo cage when Flint passed him, running back toward the camp.
"Hey, where?"
Sturm yelled at the dwarf.
"Tass, in the dragon!"
The dwarf didn't stop. Sturm turned and saw the black wicker dragon burning with flames that shot high into the air. Thick smoke boiled up, blanketing the camp. The dank, heavy swamp air preventing it from rising and drifting away. Sparks showered down as part of the blazing dragon exploded into the camp. Sturm ducked and batted out sparks that landed on his cape, then ran after the dwarf, catching up with the short-legged Flint easily.
"Flint!"
he panted, grasping the dwarf's arm.
"It's no use. Nothing could live in that furnace. We've got to get back to the others." "Let go of me!"
Flint roared so furiously that Sturm let go in amazement. The dwarf ran for the burning dragon again. Sturm heaved a sigh and ran after him, his eyes beginning to water in the smoke.
"Tassel off, Burfoot!"
Flint called.
"You idiotic kinder! Where are you?"
There was no answer.
"Tassel off!"
Flint screamed.
"If you wreck this escape, I'll murder you! So help me!"
Tears of frustration and grief and anger and smoke coursed down the dwarf's cheeks. The heat was overwhelming. It seared Sturm's lungs, and the knight knew they couldn't breathe much more of this or they would perish themselves. He took hold of the dwarf firmly, intending to knock him out if necessary, when suddenly he saw movement near the edge of the blaze. He rubbed his eyes and looked closer. The dragon lay on the ground, the head still connected to the blazing body by a long wicker neck. The head had not caught fire yet, but flames were starting to eat into the wicker neck. The head would soon be ablaze too. Sturm saw the movement again.
"Flint, look!"
Sturm ran toward the head, the dwarf pounding along beside. Two small legs encased in bright blue pants were sticking out of the dragon's mouth, kicking feebly.
"Tass!" Sturm yelled. "Get out! The head's going to burn!"
"I can't, I'm stuck!"
came a muffled voice. Sturm stared at the head, frantically trying to figure out how to free the kender, while Flint just grabbed hold of Tass's legs and pulled.
"Ouch! Stop!"
yelled Tass.
"No good,"
the dwarf puffed.
"He's stuck fast."
The inferno crept up the dragon's neck. Sturm drew his sword.
"I may cut off his head,"
he muttered to Flint,
"but it's his only chance."
Estimating the size of the kender, guessing where his head would be and hoping his hands weren't stretched out over his head, Sturm lifted his sword above the dragon's neck. Flint closed his eyes. The knight took a deep breath and brought his blade crashing down on the dragon, severing the head from the neck. There was a cry from the kender inside, but whether from pain or astonishment, Sturm couldn't tell.
"Pull!"
he yelled at the dwarf. Flint grabbed hold of the wicker head and pulled it away from the blazing neck. Suddenly, a tall, dark shape loomed out of the smoke. Sturm whipped around, sword ready, then saw it was Riverwind.
"What are you?"
The plainsman stared at the dragon's head. Perhaps Flint and Sturm had gone mad.
"The kender's stuck in there," Sturm yelled. "We can't take the head apart out here, surrounded by Draconians. We've got to—"
His words were lost in a roar of flame. But Riverwind finally saw the blue legs sticking out of the dragon's mouth. He grabbed hold of one side of the dragon's head, thrusting his hands in one of the eye sockets. Sturm got hold of the other, and together they lifted the head, Kender inside, and began running through the camp. Those few Draconians they encountered took one look at the terrifying apparition and fled.
"Come on, Raist,"
Karaman said solicitously, his arm around his brother's shoulder.
"You've got to try and stand. We have to be ready to move out of here. How do you feel?"
"How do I ever feel?"
whispered Raistlin bitterly.
"Help me up. There. Now leave me in peace for a moment."
He leaned against a tree, shivering, but standing.
"Sure, Raist,"
Karaman said, hurt, backing off. Gold Moon glanced at Raistlin in disgust, remembering Karaman's grief when he thought his brother was dying. She turned away to watch for the others, staring through the gathering smoke. Tanis appeared first, running so fast he crashed into Karaman. The big warrior caught him in his huge arms, breaking the half-elf's forward momentum and keeping him on his feet.
"Thanks,"
Tanis gasped. He leaned over, hands on his knees to catch his breath.
"Where are the others?"
"Weren't they with you?"
Karaman frowned.
"We got separated."
Tanis drew in huge gulps of air, then coughed as the smoke flew down his lungs.
"Sutorak,"
interrupted Gold Moon in an awed voice. Tanis and Karaman both spun around in alarm, staring out into the smoke-filled camp to see a grotesque sight emerging from the swirling smoke. The dragon's head with a forked blue tongue was lunging at them. Tanis blinked in disbelief. Then he heard a sound behind him that nearly made him leap into a tree in panic. He whirled around, heart in his throat, sword in his hand. Raistlin was laughing. Tanis had never heard the mage laugh before, even when Raistlin was a child, and he hoped he would never hear it again. It was a weird, shrill, mocking laughter. Karaman stared at his brother in amazement, Gold Moon in horror. Finally, the sound of Raistlin's laughter died until the mage was laughing silently, his golden eyes reflecting the glow of the Draconian camp going up in flames. Tanis shuddered and turned back around to see that, in fact, the dragon's head was carried by Sturm and Riverwind. Flint raced along in front, a Draconian helm on his head. Tanis ran forward to meet them.
"What in the name of—"
"The Kender's stuck in there,"
Sturm said. He and Riverwind dropped the head to the ground, both of them breathing heavily.
"We've got to get him out."
Sturm eyed the laughing Raistlin warily.
"What's the matter with him? Still poisoned?"
"No, he's better,"
Tanis said, examining the dragon's head.
"A pity,"
Sturm muttered as he knelt beside the half-elf.
"Tas, are you all right?"
Tanis called out, lifting the huge mouth to see inside.
"I think Sturm chopped off my hair,"
the Kender wailed.
"Lucky it wasn't your head,"
Flint snorted.
"What's holding him?"
Riverwind leaned down to peer inside the dragon's mouth.
"I'm not sure,"
Tanis said, swearing softly.
"I can't see in all this blasted smoke."
He stood up, sighing in frustration.
"And we've got to get out of here. The Draconians will get organized soon. Karaman, come here. See if you can rip off the top."
The big warrior came over to stand in front of the wicker dragon's head. Bracing himself, he got hold of the two eye sockets, closed his eyes, took a deep breath, then grunted and heaved. For a minute, nothing happened. Tanis watched the muscles bulge on the big man's arms, saw his thigh muscles absorb the strain. Blood rushed to Karaman's face. Then there was the ripping and snapping sound of wood splintering. The top of the dragon's head gave way with a sharp crack. Karaman staggered backward as the top half of the head suddenly came off in his hands. Tanis reached in, grabbed Tass's hand, and jerked him free. "Are you all right?" he asked. The Kender seemed wobbly on his feet, but his grin was wide as ever.
"I'm fine," Tass said brightly. "Just a little singed."
Then his face darkened.
"Tanis,"
he said, his face crinkling with unusual worry. He felt at his long topknot.
"My hair?"
"All there,"
Tanis said, smiling. Tass breathed a sigh of relief. Then he began to talk.
"Tanis, it was the most wonderful thing, flying like that, and the look on Karaman's face."
"The story will have to wait," Tanis said firmly. "We've got to get out of here. Karaman, can you and your brother make it all right?"
"Yeah, go on,"
Karaman said. Raistlin stumbled forward, accepting the support of his brother's strong arm. The mage glanced behind at the sundered dragon's head, and he wheezed, his shoulders shaking in silent, grim amusement.
Chapter 15. Escape. The Well. Death on Black Wings. Smoke from the burning Draconian camp hung over the black swamplands, shielding the companions from the eyes of the strange, evil creatures. The smoke floated wraith-like through the swamps, drifting across the silver moon and obscuring the stars. The companions dared not risk a light, even the light from Raistlin's staff, for they could hear horns blowing all around them as the Draconian leaders tried to re-establish order. Riverwind led them. Although Tanis had always prided himself on his own woodland skills, he completely lost all sense of direction in the black, misty mire. An occasional fleeting glimpse of stars, whenever the smoke lifted, showed him that they were bearing north. They hadn't gone far when Riverwind missed a step and plunged knee-deep into muck. After Tanis and Karaman dragged the plainsmen out of the water, Tasselhoff crept ahead, testing the ground with his hoopack staff. It sank every time.
"We have no choice but to wade," Riverwind said grimly.
Choosing a path where the water seemed shallower, the company left firm ground and splashed into the muck. At first, it was only ankle-deep. Then they sank to their knees. Soon, they sank deeper still. Tanis was forced to carry Tasselhoff, the giggling Kender, grasping him around the neck. Flint steadily refused all offers of help, even when the tip of his beard got wet. Then he vanished. Karaman, following him, fished the dwarf out of the water and slung him over his shoulder like a wet sack, the dwarf too tired and frightened to grumble. Raistlin staggered, coughing through the water, his robes dragging him down. Weary and still sick from the poison, the mage finally collapsed. Sturm grabbed hold of him and half-dragged, half-carried the mage through the swamp. After an hour of floundering in the icy water, they finally reached firm ground and sank down to rest, shivering with the cold. The trees began to creak and groan, their branches bending as a sharp wind sprang up from the north. The wind blew the mists into wispy rags. Raistlin, lying on the ground, looked up. The mage caught his breath. He sat up, alarmed.
"Storm clouds,"
he choked, coughing and fought to speak.
"They come from the north. We have no time. No time. We must reach Zakhtzoroth. Hurry, before the moon sets."
Everyone looked up. A gathering darkness was moving out of the north, swallowing up the stars. Tanis could feel the same sense of urgency that was driving the mage. Wearily, he rose to his feet. Without a word, the rest of the group rose and stumbled forward. Riverwind taking the lead. But dark swamp water blocked their path once more.
Not again.
Flint moaned.
No, we do not have to wade again. Come, look,
Riverwind said. He led the way to the water's edge, there, amid many other ruins protruding from the dank ground, lay an obelisk that had either fallen or been pushed over to form a bridge across to the other bank of the swamp.
I'll go first,
Tass volunteered, hopping energetically onto the long stone.
Hey, there's writing on this thing. Runes of some sort.
I must see,
Raistlin whispered, hurrying over. He spoke his word of command.
Sheerlock.
And the crystal on the tip of his staff burst into light.
Hurry, Sturm growled. You've just told everything within a 20-mile radius. We're here.
But Raistlin would not be rushed. He held the light over the spidery runes, studying them intently. Tanis and the others climbed onto the obelisk and joined the mage. The Kender bent down, tracing the runes with his small hand.
What does it say, Raistlin? Can you read it? The language seems very old.
It is old,
the mage whispered.
It dates from before the cataclysm. The runes say, the great city of Zakhtzaroth, whose beauty surrounds you, speaks to the good of its people and their generous deeds. The gods reward us in the grace of our home.
How awful.
Gold Moon shuddered, looking at the ruin and desolation around her.
The gods rewarded them indeed,
Raistlin said, his lips parting in a cynical smile. No one spoke. Then Raistlin whispered,
Dulak,
and extinguished the light. Suddenly the night seemed much blacker.
We must keep going,
the mage said.
Surely there is more than a fallen monument to mark what this place once stood for.
They crossed the obelisk into a thick jungle. At first, there seemed to be no trail. Then Riverwind, searching diligently, found a trail cut through the vines and the trees. He bent down to study it. His face was grim when he rose.
Draconians, Tanis asked.
Yes,
he said heavily.
The tracks of many clawed feet,
and they lead north,
straight to the city.
Tanis asked in an undertone.
Is this the broken city where you were given the staff?
And where death had black wings,
Riverwind added. He closed his eyes, wiping his hand over his face. Then he drew a deep, ragged breath.
I don't know. I can't remember. But I'm afraid without knowing why.
Tanis put his hand on Riverwind's arm.
The elves have a saying. Only the dead are without fear.
Riverwind startled him by suddenly clasping the half-elf's hand with his.
I have never known an elf,
the plainsman said.
My people distrust them, saying that the elves have no care for Kryn or for humans. I think my people may have been mistaken. I am glad I met you, Tanis of Gwalinost. I count you as a friend.
Tanis knew enough of Plains lore to realize that, with this statement, Riverwind had declared himself willing to sacrifice everything for the half-elf, even his life. A vow of friendship was a solemn vow among the plainsmen.
You are my friend too, Riverwind,
Tanis said simply.
You and Gold Moon both are my friends.
Riverwind turned his eyes to Gold Moon, who stood near them, leaning on her staff. Her eyes closed, her face drawn with pain and exhaustion. Riverwind's face softened with compassion as he looked at her.
Then it hardened, pride drawing the stern mask over it again. Zakhtzaroth is not far off,
he said coolly,
and these tracks are old.
He led the way into the jungle, After only a short walk, the northern trail suddenly changed to cobblestones.
"A street!"
exclaimed Tasselhoff.
"The outskirts of Zakhtzoroth,"
Raistlin breathed.
"About time."
Flint stared all around in disgust.
"What a mess. If the greatest gift ever given to man is here, it must be well hidden."
Tanis agreed. He had never seen a more dismal place. As they walked, the broad street took them into an open paved courtyard. To the east stood four tall, freestanding columns that supported nothing. The building lay in ruins around them. A huge, unbroken, circular stone wall rose about 4 feet above the ground. Karaman, going over to inspect it, announced that it was a well.
"Deep at that," he said.
He leaned over and peered down into it.
"Smells bad, too."
North of the well stood what appeared to be the only building to have escaped the destruction of the cataclysm. It was finely constructed of pure white stone, supported by tall, slender columns. Large golden double doors gleamed in the moonlight.
"That was a temple to the ancient gods,"
Raistlin said, more to himself than anyone else, but Gold Moon, standing near him, heard his soft whisper.
"A temple," she repeated, staring at the building. "How beautiful."
She walked toward it, strangely fascinated. Tanis and the rest searched the grounds and found no other buildings intact. Fluted columns lay on the ground, their broken pieces aligned to show their former beauty. Statues lay broken and, in some cases, grotesquely defaced. Everything was old. So old it made even the dwarf feel young. Flint sat down on a column.
"Well, we're here."
He blinked at Raistlin and yawned.
"What now, mage?"
Raistlin's thin lips parted. But before he could reply, Tasselhoff yelled,
"Draconian!"
Everyone spun around, weapons in their hands. A Draconian, ready to move, was glaring at them from the edge of the well.
"Stop it!" Tanis shouted. "It will alert others."
But before anyone could reach it, the Draconian spread its wings and flew into the well. Raistlin, his golden eyes flaring in the moonlight, ran to the well and peered over the edge. Raising his hand as if to cast a spell, he hesitated, then dropped his hand limply to his side.
"I can't," he said. "I can't think. I can't concentrate. I must sleep."
"We're all tired," Tanis said wearily. "If something's down there, it warned it. There's nothing we can do now. We've got to rest."
"It has gone to warn something,"
Raistlin whispered. He huddled in his cloak and stared around, his eyes wide.
"Can't you feel it, any of you? Half-elf? Evil about to waken and come forth."
Silence fell. Then Tasselhoff climbed up on the stone wall and peered down.
"Look! The Draconian is floating down, just like a leaf. His wings don't flap."
"Be quiet,"
Tanis snapped. Tasselhoff glanced at the half-elf in surprise. Tanis's voice sounded strained and unnatural. The half-elf was staring at the well, his hands clenching nervously. Everything was still, too still. The storm clouds massed to the north, but there was no wind. Not a branch creaked, not a leaf stirred. The silver moon and the red cast twin shadows that made things seen from the corner of the eye unreal and distorted. Then, slowly, Raistlin backed away from the well, raising his hands before him as if to ward off some dreadful danger.
"I feel it too."
Tanis swallowed.
"What is it?"
"Yes, what is it?"
Tasselhoff, leaning over, stared eagerly into the well. It looked as deep and dark as the mage's hourglass eyes.
"Get him away from there!"
Raistlin cried. Tanis, infected by the mage's fear and his own growing sense that something was terribly wrong, started to run for Tas. Even as he began to move, though, he felt the ground shake beneath his feet. The Kender gave a startled cry as the ancient stone wall of the well cracked and gave way beneath him. Tas felt himself sliding into the terrible blackness below him. He scrabbled frantically with his hands and feet, trying to clutch the crumbling rocks. Tanis lunged desperately, but he was too far away. Riverwind had started moving when he heard Raistlin's cry, and the tall man's long, swift strides carried him quickly to the well. Catching hold of Tas by his collar, the plainsman plucked him from the wall, just as the stones and mortar tumbled down into the blackness below. The ground trembled again. Tanis tried to force his numb mind to figure out what was happening. Then a blast of cold air burst from the well. The wind swept dirt and leaves from the courtyard into the air, stinging his face and eyes. "Run!" Tanis tried to yell, but he choked on the foul stench erupting from the well. The columns left standing after the cataclysm began to shake. The companions stared fearfully at the well. Then Riverwind tore his gaze away.
"Gold moon,"
he said, looking around. He dropped Tas to the ground.
"Gold moon!"
He stopped as a high-pitched shriek rose from the depths of the well. The sound was so loud and shrill that it pierced the head. Riverwind searched frantically for Gold Moon, calling her name. Tanis was stunned by the noise. Unable to move, he saw Sturm, hand on his sword, slowly back away from the well. He saw Raistlin, the mage's ghostly face glistening metallic yellow, his golden eyes red in the red moon's light, scream something Tanis couldn't hear. He saw Tasselhoff staring at the well in wide-eyed wonder. Sturm ran across the courtyard, scooped up the Kender under one arm, and ran on to the trees. Karaman ran to his exhausted brother, caught him up, and headed for cover. Tanis knew some monstrous evil was coming up out of the well, but he could not move. The words, "Run, fool, run," screamed in his brain. Riverwind, too, stayed near the well, fighting the fear that was growing within him. He couldn't find Gold Moon. Distracted by rescuing the Kender from tumbling into the well, he had not seen Gold Moon approach the unbroken temple. He looked around wildly, struggling to keep his balance as the ground shook beneath his feet. The high-pitched, shrieking noise, the throbbing and trembling of the ground, brought back hideous, nightmarish memories. Death on black wings. He began to sweat and shake, then forced his mind to concentrate on Gold Moon. She needed him, he knew, and he alone knew that her show of strength only masked her fear, doubt, uncertainty. She would be terribly afraid. He had to find her. As the stones of the well began to slide, Riverwind moved away and caught sight of Tanis. The half-elf was shouting and pointing past Riverwind toward the temple. Riverwind knew Tanis was saying something, but he couldn't hear above the shrieking sound. Then he knew. Gold Moon. Riverwind turned to go to her, but he lost his balance and fell to his knees. He saw Tanis start to run toward him. Then the horror burst from the well, the horror of his fevered nightmares. Riverwind closed his eyes and saw no more. It was a dragon. Tanis, in those first few moments when the blood seemed to drain from his body, leaving him limp and lifeless, looked at the dragon as it burst forth from the well and thought, "How beautiful! How beautiful!" Sleek and black, the dragon rose, her glistening wings folded close to her sides, her scales gleaming. Her eyes glowed red-black, the color of molten rock. her mouth opened in a snarl, teeth flashing white and wicked. Her long red tongue curled as she breathed the night air. Clear of the well's confines, the dragon spread her wings, blotting out stars, obliterating moonlight. Each wing was tipped with a pure white claw that shone blood red in the light of Lunitari. Fear such as Tanis had never imagined shriveled his stomach. His heart throbbed painfully. He couldn't catch his breath. He could only stare in horror and awe and marvel at the creature's deadly beauty. The dragon circled higher and higher into the night sky. Then, just as Tanis felt the paralyzing fear start to recede, just as he began to fumble for his bow and arrows, the dragon spoke. One word, she said, a word in the language of magic, and a thick, terrible darkness fell from the sky, blinding them all. Tanis instantly lost all grasp on where he was. He only knew there was a dragon above him, about to attack. He was powerless to defend himself. All he could do was crouch down, crawl among the rubble, and try desperately to hide. Deprived of his sense of sight, the half-elf concentrated on his sense of hearing. The shrieking noise had stopped as the darkness fell. Tanis could hear the slow, gentle flap of the dragon's leathery wings and knew it was circling above them, rising gradually. Then he couldn't hear even the flapping anymore. The wings had quit beating. He visualized a great, black bird of prey hovering alone, waiting. Then there was a very gentle rustling sound, a sound of leaves shivering as the wind rises before a storm. The sound grew louder and louder until it was the rushing of wind when the storm hits, and then it was the shrieking of the hurricane. Tanis pressed his body close against the crumbled well and covered his head with his arms. The dragon was attacking. She could not see through the darkness she had cast, but Kisanth knew that the intruders were still in the courtyard below. Her minions, the Draconians, had warned her that a group walked the land, carrying the blue crystal staff. Lord Verminard wanted that staff, wanted it kept safe with her, never to be seen in human lands. But she had lost it, and Lord Verminard had not been pleased. She had to get it back. Therefore, Kisanth had waited an instant before casting her darkness spell, studying the intruders carefully, searching for the staff, unaware that already it had passed beyond her sight. She was pleased. She had only to destroy. The attacking dragon dropped from the sky, her leathery wings curving back like the blade of a black dagger. She dove straight for the well, where she had seen the intruders running for their lives, knowing that they would be paralyzed by dragon fear. Kisanth was certain she could kill them all with one pass. She opened her fanged mouth. Tanis heard the dragon coming nearer. The great, rushing sound grew louder and louder, then stopped for an instant. He could hear huge tendons creaking, lifting and spreading giant wings. Then he heard a great gasping sound, as of air being drawn into a gaping throat. Then a strange sound that reminded him of steam escaping from a boiling kettle. Something liquid splashed near him. He could hear rocks splitting and cracking and bubbling. Drops of the liquid splashed on his hand, and he gasped as a searing pain penetrated his being. Then Tanis heard a scream. It was a deep-voiced scream, a man's scream, Riverwind. So terrible, so agonized was the scream that Tanis dug his fingernails into his palms to keep from adding his own voice to that horrible wail and revealing himself to the dragon. The screaming seemed to go on, and then it died into a moan. Tanis felt the rush of a large body swoosh past him in the darkness. The stones he pressed his body against shook. Then the tremor of the dragon's passage sank lower and lower into the depths of the well. Finally, the ground was still.
There was silence.
Tanis drew a painful breath and opened his eyes. The darkness was gone, the stars shone, the moons glowed in the sky. For a moment, the half-elf could do nothing but breathe, and breathe again, trying to calm his shaking body. Then, he was on his feet, running toward a dark form lying in the stone courtyard. Tanis was the first to reach the plainsman's body. He took one look, then choked, and turned away. What remained of Riverwind no longer resembled anything human. The man's flesh had been seared from his body. The white of bone was clearly visible where skin and muscle had melted from his arms. His eyes ran like jelly down the fleshless, cadaverous cheeks. His mouth gaped open in a silent scream. His ribcage lay exposed, hunks of flesh and charred cloth clinging to the bones, but most horrible. The flesh on his torso had been burned away, leaving the organs exposed, pulsing red in the garish red moonlight. Tanis sank down, vomiting. The half-elf had seen men die on his sword. He had seen them hacked to pieces by trolls. But this was horribly different. And Tanis knew the memory of this would haunt him forever. A strong arm gripped him by the shoulders, offering silent comfort and sympathy and understanding. The nausea passed. Tanis sat back and breathed. He wiped his mouth and nose, then tried to force himself to swallow, gagging painfully.
"Are you all right?"
Caraman asked with concern. Tanis nodded, unable to speak. Then he turned at the sound of Sturm's voice.
"May the true gods have mercy. Tanis, he's still alive. I saw his hand move."
Sturm choked. He could say no more. Tanis rose to his feet and walked shakily toward the body. One of the charred and blackened hands had risen from the stones, plucking horribly at the air.
"End it,"
Tanis said hoarsely, his throat raw from bile.
"End it, Sturm."
The knight had already drawn his sword. Kissing the hilt, he raised the blade to the sky and stood before River Wind's body. He closed his eyes and mentally withdrew into an old world where death in battle had been glorious and fine. Slowly and solemnly, he began to recite the ancient Solamnic death chant. As he spoke the words that laid hold of the warrior's soul and transported it to realms of peace beyond, he reversed the blade of the sword and held it poised above River Wind's chest.
"Return this man to Huma's breast, beyond the wild, impartial skies. Grant to him a warrior's rest, and set the last spark of his eyes free from the smothering clouds of wars upon the torches of the stars. Let the last surge of his breath take refuge in the cradling air above the dreams of ravens where only the hawk remembers death. Then let this shade to humor rise beyond the wild, impartial skies."
The knight's voice sank. Tanis felt the peace of the gods wash over him like cool, cleansing water, easing his grief and submerging the horror. Caraman, beside him, wept silently. As they watched, moonlight flashed on the sword blade. Then a clear voice spoke, "Stop! Bring him to me!" Both Tanis and Caraman sprang up to stand in front of the man's tortured body, knowing that Gold Moon must be spared this hideous sight. Sturm, lost in tradition, came back to reality with a start and reversed his killing stroke. Gold Moon stood, a tall, slender shadow, silhouetted against the golden, moonlit doors of the temple. Tanis started to speak, but he felt suddenly the cold hand of the mage grip his arm. Shivering, he jerked away from Raistlin's touch.
"Do as she says,"
the mage hissed.
"Carry him to her."
Tanis's face contorted with fury at the sight of Raistlin's expressionless face, uncaring eyes.
"Take him to her,"
Raistlin said coldly.
"It is not for us to choose death for this man. That is for the gods."
Chapter 16. A Bitter Choice. The Greatest Gift. Tanis stared at Raistlin. Not the quiver of an eyelid betrayed his feelings, if the mage had any feelings. Their eyes met, and as always, Tanis felt that the mage saw more than was visible to him. Suddenly, Tanis hated Raistlin, hated him with a passion that shocked the half-elf, hated him for not feeling this pain, hated him and envied him at the same time.
"We must do something," Sturm said harshly. "He's not dead, and the dragon may return."
"Very well," Tanis said, his voice catching in his throat.
"Wrap him in a blanket, but give me a moment alone with Gold Moon."
The half-elf walked slowly across the courtyard. His footsteps echoed in the stillness of the night as he climbed marble steps to a wide porch where Gold Moon stood in front of the shining golden doors. Glancing behind him, Tanis could see his friends wrapping blankets from their packs around tree limbs to make a battlefield stretcher. The man's body was nothing more than a dark, shapeless mass in the moonlight.
"Bring him to me, Tanis,"
Gold Moon repeated as the half-elf came up to her. He took hold of her hand.
"Gold Moon," Tanis said. "Riverwind is horribly injured. He is dying. There is nothing you can do, not even the staff."
"Hush, Tanis,"
Gold Moon said gently. The half-elf fell silent, seeing her clearly for the first time. In astonishment, he realized that the plainswoman was tranquil, calm, uplifted. Her face in the moonlight was the face of the sailor who has fought the stormy seas in his fragile boat and drifted at last into peaceful waters.
"Come inside the temple, my friend,"
Gold Moon said, her beautiful eyes looking intently into Tanis's.
"Come inside and bring Riverwind to me."
Gold Moon had not heard the approach of the dragon, had not seen its attack on Riverwind. When they entered the broken courtyard of Zakhtzaroth, Gold Moon had felt a strange and powerful force drawing her into the temple. She walked across the rubble and up the stairs, oblivious to everything but the golden doors shimmering in the silver-red moonlight. She approached them and stood before them for a moment. Then she became aware of the commotion behind her and heard Riverwind calling her name.
"Gold Moon!"
She paused, unwilling to leave Riverwind and her friends, knowing a terrible evil was rising from the well.
"Come inside, child,"
a gentle voice called to her. Gold Moon lifted her head and stared at the doors. Tears came to her eyes. The voice was her mother's. Tearsong, priestess of Kuei Xiu, had died long ago, when Gold Moon was very young.
"Tearsong,"
Gold Moon choked.
Mother! The years have been many and sad for you, my daughter.
Her mother's voice was not heard so much as felt in her heart.
And I fear your burden will not soon ease. Indeed, if you continue on, you will leave this darkness, only to enter a deeper darkness. Truth will light your way, my daughter, though you may find its light shines dimly in the vast and terrible night ahead. Still, without the truth, all will perish and be lost. Come here inside the temple with me, daughter. You will find what you seek. But my friends, Riverwind.
Gold Moon looked back at the well and saw Riverwind stumble on the shaking cobblestones.
They cannot fight this evil. They will die without me. The staff could help. I cannot leave.
She started to run back as the darkness fell.
I can't see them. Riverwind!
Mother, help me!
She cried in agony. But there was no answer.
This isn't fair.
Gold Moon screamed silently, clenching her fists.
We never wanted this. We only wanted to love each other. And now we may lose that. We have sacrificed so much, and none of it has made any difference. I am 30 years old, Mother, 30 and childless. They have taken my youth. They have taken my people. And I have nothing to show in return. Nothing.
Except this.
She shook the staff.
And now I am being asked once again to give still more.
Her anger calmed. Riverwind, had he been angry all those long years he searched for answers? All he had found was this staff, and it brought only more questions. No, he hadn't been angry, she thought. His faith is strong. I am the weak one. Riverwind was willing to die for his faith. It seems I must be willing to live, even if it means living without him. Gold Moon leaned her head against the golden doors, their metal surface cool to her skin. Reluctantly, she made her bitter decision.
I will go forward, Mother. Though if Riverwind dies, my heart dies too. I ask only one thing. If he dies, let him know, somehow, that I will continue his search.
Leaning upon her staff, the chieftain of the Kuei Shu pushed open the golden doors and entered the temple. The doors shut behind her at the precise moment the black dragon burst from the well.
Gold Moon stepped inside, soft, enfolding darkness.
She could see nothing at first, but a memory of being held very close in her mother's warm embrace played through her mind. A pale light began to shine around her.
Gold Moon saw she was under a vast dome that rose high above an intricately inlaid tile floor. Beneath the dome, in the center of the room, stood a marble statue of singular grace and beauty. The light in the room emanated from this statue.
Gold Moon, entranced, moved toward it. The statue was of a woman in flowing robes. Her marble face bore an expression of radiant hope, tempered with sadness.
A strange amulet hung around her neck. This is Mishikal, goddess of healing, whom I serve,
said her mother's voice.
Listen to her words, my daughter.
Gold Moon stood directly in front of the statue, marveling at its beauty, but it seemed unfinished, incomplete. Part of the statue was missing, Gold Moon realized. The marble woman's hands were curved, as if they had been holding a long, slender pole. But the hands were empty. Without conscious thought, with only the need to complete such beauty, Gold Moon slid her staff into the marble hands. It began to gleam with a soft blue light.
Gold Moon, startled, backed away. The staff's light grew into a blinding radiance. Gold Moon shielded her eyes and fell to her knees. A great and loving power filled her heart. She bitterly regretted her anger.
Do not be ashamed of your questioning, beloved disciple. It was your questioning that led you to us, and it is your anger that will sustain you through the many trials ahead. You come seeking the truth, and you shall receive it. The gods have not turned away from man. It is man who turned away from the true gods. Kryn is about to face its greatest trial. Men will need the truth more than ever. You, my disciple, must return the truth and power of the true gods to man. It is time to restore the balance of the universe. Evil now has tipped the scales. For as the gods of good have returned to man, so have the gods of evil, constantly striving for men's souls. The Queen of Darkness has returned, seeking that which will allow her to walk freely in this land once more. Dragons, once banished to the nether regions, walk the land.
Dragons,
thought Gold Moon dreamily. She found it difficult to concentrate and grasp the words that floated in her mind. It would not be until later that she would fully comprehend the message. Then she would remember the words forever.
To gain the power to defeat them, you will need the truth of the gods. This is the greatest gift of which you were told. Below this temple, in the ruins, haunted by the glories of ages past, rest the disks of Mishikal. Circular disks made of gleaming platinum. Find the disks, and you can call upon my power. For I am Mishikal, goddess of healing. Your way will not be easy. The gods of evil know and fear the great power of the truth. The ancient and powerful black dragon, Kisanth, known to men as Onyx, guards the disks. Her lair is in the ruined city of Zakhtzaroth below us. Danger lies ahead of you if you choose to try and recover the disks. Therefore I bless this staff. Present it boldly, never wavering, and you shall prevail.
The voice faded. It was then Gold Moon heard River Wind's death cry. Tanis entered the temple and felt as if he had walked backward into memory. The sun was shining through the trees in Qualinost. He and Lorana and her brother, Gilthanas, were lying on the riverbank, laughing and sharing dreams after some childish game. Happy childhood days had been few for Tanis. The half-elf learned early that he was different from the others. But that day had been a day of golden sunshine and warm friendship. The remembered peace washed over him, easing his grief and horror. He turned to Gold Moon, standing silently beside him.
What is this place?
That is a story whose telling must wait.
Gold Moon answered. With a light hand on Tanis's arm, she drew him across the shimmering tile floor until they both stood before the shining marble statue of Mishikal. The blue crystal staff cast a brilliant glow throughout the chamber. But even as Tanis's lips parted in wonder, a shadow darkened the room. He and Gold Moon turned toward the door. Caraman and Sturm entered, bearing the body of Riverwind between them on the makeshift litter. Flint and Tasselhoff, the dwarf looking old and weary, the Kender unusually subdued, stood on either side of the litter. An odd sort of honor guard. The somber procession moved slowly inside. Behind them came Raistlin, his hood pulled over his head, his hands folded in his robes, the specter of death itself. They moved across the marble floor, intent on the burden they bore, and came to a halt before Tanis and Gold Moon. Tanis, looking down at the body at Gold Moon's feet, shut his eyes. Blood had soaked through the thick blanket, spreading in great dark splotches across the fabric. "Remove the blanket," Gold Moon commanded. Caraman looked at Tanis pleadingly. "Gold Moon," Tanis began gently. Suddenly, before anyone could stop him, Raistlin bent down and tore the blood-stained blanket from the body. Gold Moon gave a strangled gasp at the sight of Riverwind's tortured body, turning so pale that Tanis reached out a steadying hand, fearing she might faint. But Gold Moon was the daughter of a strong, proud people. She swallowed, drew a deep, shuddering breath. Then she turned and walked up to the marble statue. She lifted the blue crystal staff carefully from the goddess's hands. Then she returned to kneel beside River Wind's body.
"Kantoka," she said softly. "My beloved."
Reaching out a shaking hand, she touched the dying plainsman's forehead. The sightless face moved toward her as if he heard. One of the blackened hands twitched feebly, as if he would touch her. Then he gave a great shudder and lay perfectly still. Tears streamed unheeded down Gold Moon's cheeks as she lay